We'll get started. Go ahead and get started now. It's 10:30. Welcome everyone to SharePoint SPC 231, step-by-step search development in SharePoint 2013. My name is Andrew Wardley. I'm an architect with the Search Center of Excellence at Microsoft.
And I'm Matt King. I'm a senior consultant at Microsoft Services.
Did my thing work? So what are we here today to do? We're going to be building a representative search solution. So this is not going to do everything, but we're going to do as much as we can in an hour. We'll be crawling content from an external data source using BCS, Business Connectivity Service, leveraging a flat file. This could actually be any kind of line of business data. In this case, it's recipe data, so we'll do a little a recipe site. We'll be enriching the content using the content enrichment in SharePoint 2013. This is a functionality that somewhat existed in Fast Search for SharePoint 2010. We'll be extracting caloric information from the content. We'll be customizing the Search Center user experience, leveraging new functionality, hover panels. We'll also be looking at how this is done using display templates, getting into Design Manager and whatnot. And then we're stealing from a presentation later on today, I believe, or tomorrow morning, which is building a Windows 8 app to SharePoint 2013. We're just going to take their thing. We're hoping this will inspire you to go to that session. And we'll just point that to our code, to our search service, and expose that on a Windows desktop application, Windows 8. So SharePoint 2013, you've got search. The search under SharePoint 2013 powers on-prem Office 365, as well as, I should say, Office 365 is in the cloud, as well as on-prem. In this case, because we're actually focusing on content enrichment, which is the piece that Matt will be talking about, because we're focusing on that, this is really more of an on-prem discussion. Some of the stuff I'll be talking about, result types and templates and display, that stuff can be handled in the cloud. So you want to go deeper into this as well. There's a session that already occurred, step-by-step building search-driven applications in SharePoint 2013. You can go and see it online, watch that if you haven't already seen it. So who are you? You're not new to SharePoint. This guy, by the way, was just because you're not new does not mean you're not cool. This guy was very cool, didn't know SharePoint at all. By the way, this is Matt's grandfather, taken well before SharePoint was released. Today we know you're a mix of IT pro and developers. We know this, of course, from looking at who's attending. But this is this actually coincides with what we see in search. Matt and I have both been doing search for a number of years, and we've seen sort of this cross between this sort of blurred line between development tasks and IT pro tasks. The orange line, the orange piece there was business users, which of course we also see the interest in what you can do with search. So you're comfortable with code, with XML, with Visual Studio. With PowerShell. That's hopefully who you are today. If you're not, there was a session covered on Monday. It's recorded. Jem Aiken covered it, SharePoint 259. We recommend you go and take a look at that. If you're not one of those people and you want to leave, you can. If not, stay, please. We're welcome to stay. So what lies ahead? We'll be covering sort of the two sides of the story. One is content acquisition, which Matt King will be covering. And then I'll get into some of the user experience changes that would be mapped out. So I'm going to quickly do a demo of what this will look like when I'm done. So this is where we're going to get to by the end of this session. Okay. So I'm starting with just the default search center. What's that? No, we haven't actually done the search yet. So we'll do a search. do a search on, you see these various refiners we have on the left side. These are out-of-the-box refiners we have. We have slide refiner with graph, bar graphs. We have slide refiners here, meal type. In this case, it's a multi-value select refiner. We have the graphical hover panel, okay? Another thing I've done is we've got something called query rules. I've set one up for chicken. And we've got result result block that's been triggered on this particular piece. So this is what we'll have out of the box. Or I should say when we're complete. Okay.
All right, so we'll move into content acquisition. We're going to go back to this slide repeatedly to kind of give you a sense of where we're at. We're going to start at the beginning. You have an empty search service application, and the first task that you need to do is sort of some management around that. Central admin's great. In 2013, it's actually a lot better. The search admin's a lot better than it was. You can do a lot more, especially the schema management. It's very easy to see what you have, what the options are. But at the end of the day, it's not repeatable. PowerShell, you can do almost everything in PowerShell, and I sort of don't do a project where it's not scripted in PowerShell. If I have to muck with things in central admin, it sort of drives me nuts, and I do the PowerShell equivalent instead. So today we're going to show off a couple scripts that we use in MCS all the time. These are all available. I'll get to where they're available. The first is what we call the maintain script, and its job is to set up the schema for you. So this is going to have all the managed properties, it's going to have all the crawled properties, and it's going to have the mappings from the crawled to managed properties and all of their options. You can define new ones, you can modify existing ones, you can sort of do the whole thing. The nice thing about this is it lets you come into a bare system, and before ever having loaded any content, you can run this. It'll set up your crawl property, set up your mappings, and set up everything. You don't have to run a crawl, get the crawl property set up, and then do your mappings. The next one is a deceptively small bit of code behind this one, but I find it extremely useful. I use it all the time, especially doing something like a BCS crawl where you're sort of reiterating and doing small crawls all the time. It just lets you run it from the command shell. It gives you a nice interactive feed out of where the crawl progress is. It gives you a summary at the end, gives you the elapsed time. So I know every time I run my crawl, it takes 3 minutes. That'll come in important later. There's a couple more. We have all these shared on TechNet Script Center. I'll call out Brent Groom, who's ducking over there, but he's the man behind that. We have a lot of 2010 stuff. We're starting to roll out the 2013 stuff, and look for more later. You can get the link in the slide deck later. So now we have our schema set up. Our next step is to get some content in. As Andrew said, we're going to use the BCS to do that. This is in 2013, sort of the main way you'll be getting external content into the system. It does a lot more than just getting content in for search, but for the purposes of this talk, we're going to focus just on the search part. It has several flavors. There's two that are sort of no code. If you're going against OData or a SQL server, you can set up a model file and not have to write a line of code. And then there's two where you're going to be writing code generally. The WCF is the web service, and then the .NET assembly. Today we're going to use the WCF service. I think this is sort of gives you the most power and flexibility. The .NET assemblies are sort of a pain to manage and load and deal with the GAL and all that. So we'll stick to WCF. Before we get into it, I wanted to take a look at how the BCS works from a search perspective, because I think it's instructive in pointing out what you need to do and what you don't want to do. The first step is the BCS will call out to, did that not run? The first step, thank you, is the BCS will send a method. All of these methods are pulls from your service, so you can't push anything in. The BCS is going to ask for some data back. The first one is the finder, and the finder's job is to return all the documents. After that, for each document, there's a specific finder's called, and its job is to return the properties for the document. And these properties will be turned into crawled properties, and then later you can map them. And then the next one, again, for every document, gets called as a stream accessor. This is optional. You don't have to define this one. But the important part about this is that it's the only way to get data into the system. So if you have attachments, Word files or Excel files that you want to have parsed and the text extracted, you have to define the stream accessor. And this isn't part of the out-of-the-box model that you get. That was all for full crawls. For incremental crawls, you replace the finder with these two methods, the changed and the deleted ID enumerator. They sort of do the same thing, but they get a cookie that tells them the last time they worked and can send back in the send back just the changes. If you don't define these two methods, you will still see run incremental crawl in content source. But behind the scenes, it'll do a full crawl, and that won't work very well in your when you try to scale up. I should point this way with the thing. So the next task is really to optimize the BCS for search. There's a number of options that are given to you that aren't immediately apparent that you'll want to take advantage of. The first is enable a full search experience. There's a couple things in this category. The first is you have to actually tell in your model that this source should be available as a search source. So if you don't put this little magic bit in, I'll show you where that goes later, but if you don't put that magic bit in, it doesn't show up as an option to crawl. The next one is the stream accessor, as I mentioned. If you don't provide that, you don't get data. And last is the display URI field. This is a way of telling your model that one particular property on your document is actually the URL that you want to use. And this will then show up as the URL later on. The important part is that that's the only way to get it to show up as the URL in the Search Center without actually modifying the Search Center code itself. There are a number of other options. You can set the title and last modified date, but all of those you can handle with mappings. It's the URI that you want to make sure you handle explicitly. The next thing is planning for volume. You probably noticed before that I said the finder returns all documents, and then you said, well, I have 40 million documents. How's that going to work? And it's not going to work. You'll fail miserably. You can add paging to the finder method so it only asks for 1,000 documents at a time or whatever number works best for you, and then arbitrarily scale up. It's not quite that easy to go 40 million, but you can do it. The next piece is that the finder method actually only needs to return the ID of the document. In the default model that you get out of Visual Studio or the SharePoint Designer, it'll be returning all of the data, all of the properties, and that can be a lot of content depending on your source. And then the last thing is really just planning for changes, adding incremental crawling support. Again, it doesn't come out of the box. It's not hard to do, you just need to know to do it. There's a lot more to the BCS. Importantly, you can do a lot around security descriptors and client-side caching. There's a couple call-outs here. The one I mentioned in particular is the security trimming. You haven't missed that one. I feel like everything we're mentioning, well, you've already missed it, but you haven't missed that one, so you go check that out this afternoon. It's actually one of the R&D guys giving it, or at least one R&D guy. Our last stop is content enrichment. A little bit about how the content enrichment service works. It's very simple. There's a web service. You can register it. There's only one. As the documents come through, they get sent to the web service. There are a number of options that you have to set when you're registering it. There's the input and the output properties. The input properties are what gets sent in. The output properties are what you can send back. You don't have to send them back, but these are the only ones you're allowed to send back. There's also a debug mode. I think the important thing to note on the debug mode is that the way it works right now is you get all of the properties in and you're not allowed to send any properties out. I believe this will be addressed at some point, but it's sort of a little annoying. The other thing is you can get the raw data in. This is important if you're doing your own extraction or processing of the content. It's read-only, you can't make any changes to it. And then lastly, and I think importantly, there's the error mode. If you put in an error and something happens with your web service, the document will fail and won't go into the index. I think this can be used for good reasons, and we're gonna do one of those today. There's a whole lot more on content enrichment, and there was a session yesterday on that you can check out later.
I was gonna point out also that there's some great partners who are actually using this functionality, this web service callout, that are doing stuff in there at the exhibit hall, so go ahead and check them out.
So specifically what we're going to do today is we're going to extract some metadata we have in our content. We have some HTML snippets, and we're going to pull out some information to make a refiner. We're going to add some metadata, and we're going to reject documents, like I said. If anybody's worked with the BCS in the past for search, you might have noticed that there are these sort of, they're actually container documents from the crawl. Every time, everything that comes into the crawl becomes a document, and that goes to the search engine. They're meaningless from the BCS search point of view. And in 2010, I've always dealt with this by doing a query scope to hide them from the end users. Now we can actually reject those documents and not let them into the system, which is, I think, a much more elegant solution. All right, that's enough talking. Let's see how it actually works. If I can switch, 57.
This is actually the wrong.
What's that?
It said user experience.
Oh, shoot, sorry.
We're actually not actually doing the user experience right now. We're doing the content enrichment.
I'm going to show you what
something,
I just did.
Something just happened there on the slides, but.
So the first thing I wanted to do is to walk through the configuration file for the maintain script that I mentioned earlier. It's really pretty simple to understand. You basically, at the top, you define your managed properties. There's no mystery to what these property names are here. These are taken off of the underlying object, the object that you get back from PowerShell. So you can inspect, you know, you can pipe it to get manage, to get member and inspect the options, and set them in here. There are some options that are typed or have sub objects. Not all of those are handled yet in this version of the script. We'll be adding more of those as we go. It's not hard to do. You just kind of go in and make the change. The next section here is the crawl properties. If anybody's worked with either the maintain script or crawl properties in 2010, one thing to note is that the variant types that you used to have to register, the crawl properties were typed. That's been deprecated in 2013, but it's been taken out almost everywhere except for crawl properties. And the trick is you just set that to zero if you want to create your own crawl property yourself with PowerShell. That one threw me for a loop for a little while. We can also define our own custom categories. And then last, we have the mappings from crawl property to manage property. One thing to note here is that the script is helpful by default. It puts the mapping at the front of the list. So if you have multiple mappings for a managed property, it puts your custom ones at the front. A frequent error that people get into is putting their crawl property at the end and then not realizing that there's going to be a crawl property that was already mapped that was set and it wasn't their custom one. I've run into that problem. This script takes care of that. You can optionally tell it to put it at the end if you want. All right, so let's run this.
He's a very fast typer, you can see.
Tab works very well. The other thing in PowerShell, if people aren't really deep PowerShell people, is F8 will do a reverse search. I didn't know that for a long time. I'm an old Linux guy, so I have a lot of command line experience, but that one took me for a loop. The weird thing, though, is it's case sensitive. It's like the only thing that's case sensitive, but the reverse search is case sensitive. Go figure. So you can see the output here. It runs. It tells you when it's creating. We can actually run this multiple times, and it knows enough not to recreate it the second time. It checks to see if it needs to make any changes, but it's good to go now. All right. So the next thing I want to do is I'm going to actually start my BCS service. I wrote this as a, now I'm a really fast typer. I wrote this as a console host, mostly just for debugging purposes so that I could actually test incremental crawling and paging and all of that. I can tell it how many documents to load, and then I'll be able to actually load extra documents or delete documents or do whatever I want. So I'll just hit return here, and it's going to load 250 documents that are now ready to be crawled. All right. So now we have our BCS started. The next step is we're going to actually load the model file. So to do that, I have a shortcut to the BCS management page, and you can see there's no models. For a WCF service, the only thing you need to do is load the model, which is a XML file that I will show to you in a moment. So I have that queued up and ready to go. I'll set the permissions. And I will say import. Now, the reason why I started my web service before I did my import is because the import's actually going to go out and ping the web service. And if it's not running, it's going to yell at you. Or if you've declared a method that you haven't implemented, it's going to yell at you. I do get one warning here for search purposes. This isn't needed. This is a limit to make sure if you have a SharePoint list being driven off this source, it's not going to go crazy. So I'm going to ignore that. We can now drill into our model. And we have one entity defined. And you can see that we have a number of properties that are set to be returned. These are all typed. And these will show up as the crawl property will be the entity name dot the property name. All right, so.
So just another thing here. Yeah. Some of these here, by the way, like serves, for example, we'll be leveraging later on for a slider bar chart. You'll see that it's an integer type. So we have to, that's one of the requirements for later on.
All right. Yes? So the crawl properties.
Repeat the question.
So the question was how you map those properties. Right. So before, if I'll scroll back here, you'll see that the crawl property is called recipe.longdirections, recipe.imageFileName, and those are being mapped to a managed property. So like I said, the recipe is the name of my entity, and then the image file name is the name of the property. So that's the, that's how it becomes a crawled property. And then that's how the mapping happens. That's in my model, that's the unique ID for the document. Yes. I'll show you that in a little bit, but that's what the model's gonna use as the ID, and it's gonna pass it to the specific finder and the stream accessor and all of that. It's a content ID, so it's an external ID. What's that? Sure. I can show you the content source. It's an ugly thing. It's a CSV file. I mean, I can bring it up, but
maybe if we could show you later, perhaps we could just continue with the flow. Is that okay?
So we have the mapping's done. We've loaded our model. We can now set up our crawl. So I'm going to go over to the search service application into the content sources page and just create one real quick. Depending on the type of BCS, it'll either be a line of business data or a custom repository. The web service is a line of business. And I'll pick my instance here. And that's all I need. And my content source is ready. There's one last step before we can crawl, and that's to add the content enrichment web service. Add content enrichment. So this is a pretty simple script. I'm not actually going to go into the details of it, but it's really just creating the configuration file that you see here. That's the one I explained earlier. You can see that I'm passing in the content source, the title, recipe item number, nutrients, and I can pass back the process time and recipe categories. Now it's been added to I actually have two service applications here, and I've added it to both of them. And I'm going to just start my crawl. And off we go. So now we're just going to sit here for 3 minutes if anybody has any questions. No, I'm kidding. Yes. Yes. Yeah. So that the maintain script is actually creating those crawl properties if they don't exist ahead of the crawl. So if you know what your crawl properties are going to be named, you can go ahead and create them before you ever crawl. And this is really important if you're taking this setup to a new installation or from dev to QA or QA to production. I know that there is a sort of a search configuration import-export feature, but that's at sort of the site collection or higher level. It doesn't help you at the search service application. There's unfortunately no way to export and import at that level. So this sort of takes that. It doesn't do there's no export part to pull out the changes you've made. It would be nice to write that. It's a little tricky to figure out what changes you've made and what you want to keep. All right, so we're entering crawling full, but before we see how it ends, I want to just take a quick step through the model if people haven't seen these before. If you work in SharePoint Designer, or I know in Visual Studio as well, there are some graphical ways of dealing with these models. I, for my purposes, at least adding the search-specific features, I found them to be a little more obscuring rather than clarifying, so I like to work in the XML. If you like to work the other way, that's great, but I'm going to show you the XML because that's the only way I know. The important things to note here is that your service is actually mentioned in two places. And then here is the little magic, make it show up as a search source. If you don't put that there, then you're in trouble. Then we get right into the entities. This is where you define the identifier. That there was a question earlier about that. So I'm calling out what my identifier is going to be. And then I start to declare my methods. This first one is the finder. I'm not going to go through the details of all of them because this is a lot of XML. The important thing to hear is to see that to enable things like the paging of the finder, and later with the incremental crawls, you have to set up these cookies, which are called filter descriptors or filters. So we set up two here. One's the cookie that's going to be used for my service to remember where it left off, and then the next one is going to be the way my service is going to be able to say it's done. These then you translate into parameters. You can see that there's sort of two. There's an input parameter that's modifiable, an output parameter for the has more, and then you have the return parameter where I'm just returning the item, the ID, excuse me. Moving down, just another page at the top here, you'll see this is where you actually give it, the method is a finder and has a property name of root finder. That's the magic sauce to tell it that it's the finder method to use. I'm going to make all of this code as sort of a little an example of how to set up BCS for a search source, so you'll be able to come back to this later and see how it's all done. I'll pop over to my service implementation just quickly. You'll see that here's the implementation of the methods. The first one's the finder. It should look, you know, as expected. It takes in the cookie, can pass back the has more, and it returns a list of recipes. I have the other ones here. Again, I'm not going to go into detail on all of them. They all sort of follow the same model. And then we have the data items. And again, these should look familiar from looking at the model. They should line up fairly nicely. Working with this inside of the service itself is pretty straightforward. For the purposes here, I've sort of abstracted out how I'm dealing with the CSV file from here so that it doesn't get in the way. So I have this LOB object that kind of hides all that off. So you can focus on just taking the cookie in. In this case, I'm just going to parse it as an integer. And then I'm going to look to see if I have more documents, I'll set the has more, and then I return the recipes. It's really not hard to do. All right, so I think 3 minutes have gone by since I... Oh, wait, there's one more thing to show you. This is the implementation of the content processing web service. This one I didn't do as a console host. This one's registered with IIS. It's you can really do it any way you want. And in the other session on content enrichment and extensibility, they actually talk about how to put a routing service in front of this so you can actually scale this out. I'm not going to cover any of that, but you'll want to do that if you're crawling at scale. All I'll show here is that I'm just grabbing the recipe item number and the content source, and then I know that if it's a recipe document and it has an item number, then I want it. If it doesn't, then it's one of those container documents, and I'll fail it. So here I'm giving it an error code, and I'll return it later. Again, this is very straightforward. The only thing to keep in mind is that you can only have one web service, so if you have multiple things you need to do, you need to build that all into your web service or set up some kind of pipelining thing yourself. And that's all there is to it. We return. So now let's see if my crawl has finished. So the crawl has finished. It took 3 minutes, just like I said, and it had 250 successes, which is good because that's how many documents I loaded, and it had two errors, which is exactly correct because I had two container documents. I'll quickly come over here and show you on the crawl log. You'll be able to see those. And I have my two errors. And these are errors because of the external content processing service. All right, so now we've got our data loaded, which is good. Let's see if it's actually searchable, which it should be. I wanted to take this as an opportunity to show off a tool that another MCS consultant built, Nadim. He just recently published this on CodePlex. I have a link at the end. It is called the SharePoint 2013 Search Query Tool. This is a very useful tool. It uses the REST API. And one of the nice things is as you use it, it shows you all of the options that you can set, which, you know, for debugging purposes or just exploring purposes is great. It also will show you the URL that gets created, and you can use that as a template to figure out how you want to change your REST API queries.
I think one of the nice things with SharePoint 2013, especially in the search area, is to be able to do remote HTTP requests and get back XML results to that. This is actually going to make it sort of easier to use for other platforms, including mobile devices and whatnot.
So you'll see as I'm selecting my options up at the top, that URL is changing. And I'm going to add one here, calories. And then I will run my search. I'll also add one refiner. So I'll run my search. We get back results, which hopefully look somewhat as we expected. My URLs are a nice friendly URL, not the BDC3 thing. And then refinements, I'll come over here, and we have actual refinement buckets. So this means that my crawl worked as expected, it means my content enrichment worked as expected, and we're ready to go. All right, so before I turn this off, I feel like I actually went a little faster than I intended, and I apologize. Are there any questions on this in particular before we move into the... Yes.
Does the content enrichment service have to be based on HTTP?
I believe you can add your own. You can do HTTPS. I don't know if you can do any kind of other authentication models. No, it's either HTTP or HTTPS, I believe. All right, so let's back over here.
Okay, thanks, Matt. My piece will be less code, but hopefully you'll enjoy it. We'll get into some of the UI components and some functionality that's really pretty amazing that SharePoint 2013 is bringing. We'll be looking at custom refiners. So the refiners that we'll be looking at, all out-of-the-box refiners, very easy to do in SharePoint 2010. It was actually somewhat cumbersome to do some of these things. You had to maybe download a CodePlex web part or get a partner one or create your own. These are the three out-of-the-box that we'll be looking at, a slide refiner, a slider with bar graph, and multi-value. Multi-value is new. It's pretty cool because you can actually select two, apply. For the sliders, they will have to be, the multi-value is a string refiner. On the other two sliders, they have to be just on integer managed properties. So we looked at the two that he indexed, which was calories and recipes we'll be looking at. I'm sorry, calories and number of servings. What I like about we'll see, is that you're able to actually define on the page the intervals. So you can do this in the index schema, or as you're troubleshooting, you can define, you're looking at content, you want to see how a particular search term does, you can define those intervals so you get nice, in this case of slider with bar graph, you get nice bar graph representation. We'll be looking at display templates. So these are new to SharePoint 2013. We'll be looking at the design manager. Design Manager is the way to work with templates and display templates for search results for everything on display side within SharePoint 2013. I think there was a round of applause at the keynote for the fact that you could use Dreamweaver or Notepad++ or whatever you want to use. SharePoint Designer will not contain Design View anymore, so that's some people think that's good. So the other thing, too, is that one important little note, we discovered in our in our creating our demo is that you have to, in 2012 server, you have to enable the web dev view.
It's the user experience.
Yeah. So that's so we can do the mapping and then quickly tie it into Dreamweaver, whatever we wanted to do to edit our upload our new design templates. You work directly with HTML, and the dual JavaScript snippets are converted for you automatically. The hover panel functionality you've seen, this is the preview hovering. So when you look at a PowerPoint, it shows you a PowerPoint or a Word document, and you can customize this look and feel. We're going to be looking at just pure text data, so we're going to actually be modifying it to render with an image the content that we're looking at. You work with, what's nice is you work with the existing templates that are there. Result type, so this is actually how we define the particular result type, and we can actually define that result type to be tied to any other property. In this case, we're going to define that to be content source, which is recipes. If you want to go deeper on this, there's a session that already happened, Customizing Search Experiences 2013, SharePoint 63. Please go take a look at it. The last thing we'll be looking at is Query Rules Engine. I came from the FAST acquisition four and a half years ago, and I think this is really awesome. What you can do with the Query Rules Engine. You can do this on federated sources. You can do this on local sources. You can do this on with action words. It's very powerful, I think. So we'll be looking at activating a result block. We saw that with the word chicken. You can actually then dive in more on that. You can do this on images. Any kind of property you want to match for a result block. And then we'll get into Query Rules Builder and creating that. Sorry, little problems with my finger there. Two different sessions on this. SBC 143, making great search-based applications, query rules, already happened. The other session, 2:30, step-by-step building search-driven applications. I didn't actually attend that. Matt had gone to it yesterday, said it was a great session, so also recorded. Lastly, we'll just take a reference application from stealing it from a session happening today or tomorrow. That's using Windows 8 to tie into SharePoint 2013 search in the back end. We'll just point it to our content and render that. Interesting thing in this Windows 8 app is actually they chose to do C#. It's leveraging the REST API inside of Visual Studio project. One of the things we found out is I was troubleshooting trying to figure out why the refiners weren't showing up. It's because you actually have to specifically request the refiners you want. In our case, our refiners were different than theirs. Okay, so I think we will, yeah, great. Okay, so here we are here. The first thing we're going to do is do a search for all. And I'm going to go ahead and edit the page. All right. Well, let me just step on what we're going to do first. I'm going to edit the page. I can actually select the refiners I want right on the page. And then I will define those intervals for each one and also define what each one of those refiner will look like, the three we talked about. Right. So I'm going to go ahead and do that, edit the page. Sorry, I mistyped. Sorry. Okay. We're going to go into the refinement panel. We're going to edit this web part. We're going to choose the refiners.
And for people who have done this with 2010, I think this, I can't understate how great this is. This is a huge time saver.
And the other interesting thing, too, is the reason why we're able to do these integer refinements, right, is because we're getting deep hit counts, which in SharePoint search, you couldn't get that. They were shallow headcounts. These are deep refinements. So this is a fast search for SharePoint 2010 functionality. Make it into the SharePoint Search 2013.
Yes.
So in my case, I'm going to look for recipe calories. I'm going to look for category. I'm going to look for recipe serves. I'll add these right here. I'm in recipe serves right now. I'll call this serves. I'll select this to be a slider with bar graph. I'll set the, again, we could have defined this in the index schema. Or, again, if you're troubleshooting this and you want to see what this looks like in this preview pane, you do that right here. So there's no, make sure you put semicolons. Very early on, I used to put commas all the time and lots of problems there. So we've set that up. We'll go to recipe category. Notice that last one was an integer type. So it was selectable because it was an integer type. This one, we will not be able to select other than just multi-value. Or so this one is meal type, I'll call it.
I think the multi-value one is also going to be very useful for people. A lot of people implemented this on their own, and there were a couple examples of how to do it, and a lot of them didn't work very well, and they were confusing to the end users. Having a nice, consistent way of it operating, I think, is going to be a huge win.
So I cannot select slide graphs. Slide refiners. I'll just do multi-value. And then lastly, calories. Again, you see type integer. We'll just call it calories. And here I can actually select. I'm going to just call it a standard slider. Custom. Again, setting my range. I know from having looked at this that these are the right ranges to get good rep. Actually, in this case, it's not about graph representation, because I don't have a bar graph. And then we'll go ahead and preview these refiners. And you can see them here, right? There's my slide refiner with bar graphs. There's my standard slide refiner. And there's my multi-value refiner. Okay. Actually, This happened, by the way, so be very careful about this. If you change focus, you will the hover pop-up will disappear, and you will have to type it in again. So we'll do this quicker this time. My apologies.
Another note here is when he's done, he's going to click OK, and then the really important thing is he's actually going to say OK or apply on the refinement panel, like edit box up in the right-hand corner. If you go straight to check in, you'll lose your changes as well. That one's bit me before and will probably bite me again, but what's that? You don't need to do that anymore. Yeah. So once if he clicks OK here and then he clicks apply the changes, he'll be good to go. Yes. Yes, definitely. The question was about the override default configuration, which isn't needed anymore. Was there another question? We've been checking it in. You can turn off that functionality at the. Yeah, I mean, if I was doing this, I have another script that will sort of modify these web parts, just set the properties that I need. So I'll do this. I'll then set up my script, and then I can run that in another environment as well. I think PowerShell and the reflection opportunities there is huge, and I've done a lot of work that's taken advantage of that.
So I'm just checking in. You see I did that. I just quickly went over that. we'll just quickly just do a search again. Interesting thing here, I do a search for star wildcard. Wildcard pulls back all results from the index. That's a cool little trick. All right, so now we've got our refiners. if we look now, we'll go into the result source. So we define the result source that we want. In this case, we're going to tie the result source to the content source. But we could actually tie the result source to something else as well. So we'll go into site settings. This is at the site level. We're looking at a search result source. We're going to create a new search result source. We'll call this recipes. Local content. You notice you could actually have remote SharePoint content. You could have open search, so we could do federation. It could be a federated result source, or even exchange content. We'll get into launch the query builder real quick here. Excuse me. I'm going to actually select the properties to look at. The property I want for this result source is to be the content source that he created earlier. So that's content source. And I'm going to say value manual recipes. Add this property. There, look, it built it out for me. So that's what the syntax looks like. I can test this query, and I can see 250 results. Remember, that's what he previously indexed. I'll set OK on this.
It's another very handy thing. You don't have to, like, you know, fire off the request and then go back to your search center, try it, and say, oh, it didn't work. Go back in. I think this will save a lot of time as well.
So now I have my result source. Okay. The next piece is going to be we're going to look at the result type. But when we design that result type, we also want to have the ability to select the display templates that we create. I'm not going to get into looking at the display templates just because of interest of time. But rest assured, if you have your designer, your folks, modify it, you can upload it. I'll get into the site right now. I'll get into Design Manager. I'm going to upload design files. You see a nice little pointer to my mapping, right? Okay. I'm looking for display templates here. Here they are. I'm going to look at the search display templates. Okay. This is where they're all stored, right? You see the ones in HTML, in JavaScript. I'm actually have the magic of television, or whatever you want to call it. I have the previous display templates that I want. In this case, they're here. Item recipe and item recipe hover panel. I'm going to copy them right onto this location. See them copied? Okay. So now they've just been copied. What I'm going to do is actually verify that they were properly converted. Okay. So I'm going to look at display templates within the design manager again. And I'm going to scroll down.
A neat thing about this is it's the fastest timer service in SharePoint. These things happen instantly. You can pretty much save your file and hit reload on your search center, and the changes will be applied, and you'll see your results. It's a really quick turnaround.
So there's a conversion successful. So that's good. Okay, so now we have these display templates set up. So when I create a result type, I can say for this result type, use this display template for both the standard result and the hover panel as well. So let's get into that. Again, we'll go to site settings. We'll go to search result types. We'll create a new result type. There's a whole bunch of them out there you can look at. we'll call this, again, recipes, just for... We'll get into here. We'll get into it's going to be on all the sources. We could actually select in this case. let me show more conditions. Excuse me. I'm going to actually set this to be on the property I want, which in this case is content source recipes. So we'll just get into that content source recipes. Equals any of recipes. We're going to skip these other pieces here. We're going to display the template, which is now recipes, is actually there for us to choose. It wasn't there prior. You have to trust me on that. And then we will save, optimize for frequent use. We haven't played with that too much, but there's some caching that goes on.
Yeah. I've found if you have that checked, sometimes your results won't change as quickly. So. Yeah.
So now we've got our result type set up, okay? Matched to content source. We could actually then go and take a quick look. Search and say chicken. And there. So it's pretty cool, right? It's now mapping to that display template for the hover panel. And we got the image nice there.
And you have control of changing. You can change those little buttons down at the bottom to have more actions. You can expose any of the metadata that you have in your documents. There's a lot you can do with this. I think people will have fun with this.
But. Yeah. The last thing we're going to do is just create a query rule and a result block. All right? Okay. So let's do that. So we're going to search query rules. All right, we're going to select local sources, SharePoint results. We're going to create a new query rule. There's a bunch of them out there, nice reference ones you can look at. So you type in a search for SharePoint deck or whatever. Deck becomes an action word. Actually refines that filter, that search on SharePoint now instead of, and lets you get a result block on PowerPoint slides. That's just an example. We're going to create our own new rule. We'll call it recipes again. We'll look at matching the following words. So we'll say chicken and beef. We're going to go and add we'll add the context. We're doing it on the following sources. We'll go down to, we'll ignore all these little pieces here. We'll go into add a result block. And in this case, we'll just say recipes, change this to recipes. And we'll configure this to actually, we'll keep the same search term, right, which is chicken. We'll refine this just to be within recipes. So it only search recipes when it finds that term. We'll set this to 4. That's how many to display. We'll have this block actually come to the top of the results. We could actually let it float. So is this a popular search term? Is this block of results actually very popular for this search term? It will then let it kind of go up and down in relevancy automatically. We're just going to set it to the top. The more link. You could actually create your own code to display recipes differently than you might return recipe results on a separate page. This is actually done for video, for example. If you look for video, it actually renders another page with more links or PowerPoint slides. We're just going to, just for our sake, keep it as is. You could actually set up a different display template. So I could choose to have a different display template for the results inside the result block that override the other display templates for the results that don't match that query term. So we'll keep the same. We'll save the result. And now we can see that there. We'll do our search on chicken again. Oops, something happened there. Let's go back again. Ah, there we go. I guess there's some timing issues there. But it's here. I've got my 4 results back on chicken. This could have been anything. We thought about this. What we could have done was, say, set the word healthy or healthy chicken and set the property that matches to calories and set that to be a threshold of below 250 or something like that. So I mean, you can really come up with all kinds of creative ways to create the search, get the search experience setting up on query rules.
And then you can also change the display. You can pick a new template just for the box there. So you could make those just images, or in the case of videos, you can just have the thumbnail of the video or whatever.
Yeah. We've got a multi-select, lunch and dinner. We'll apply them. You do have to select apply on those. They're not automatic like the slider graphs are. And if we do a search, so there's our hover panels, but if we look at a search for, all things, and we look at the team site, for example, you can see that the preview is still there. We haven't changed that result type. Okay, so last thing I'm going to do here is just show you how we can tie this into the Visual the Windows 8 app. that they'll be creating tomorrow in the particular session. Remember the name of it? The number?
No.
No, but it's building Windows 8 app with SharePoint 2013 search. So, okay. So, a couple things I had to do. I loaded this code directly. A couple things I told you I had to do. Paul Summers and Dan Benson had set up a splash screen on, in this case, items with a size greater than zero. I decided to just do it on my content source of recipes, so I set that. I simply made a modification to the pointer of where my app was, right here, SP Web, pointed it to my location. I had to also request the specific refiners. So I selected recipe serves, recipe category, and recipe, what was the
calories.
Other one? Calories, thank you. Made a couple of changes to the outlook of the images and icons. It actually integrates nicely there. We got a little pretty image. This is actually a desktop view. One of the things I found was the Windows simulator was kind of troublesome, so I actually shut that down, and it's right on my desktop. I have search results right now for standard for content source. It's actually integrated within the charm. And I type in chicken. You can see I'm actually searching for, and there are my results. You can see the refiners that I changed, right? Here they are, meal type, right? Dinner, servings. Okay. So that's the demo. I'm not going to get into that code. Paul Summers and Dan Benson will get into that. You can ask them all you want about that. We just want to show you that how easily you could tie into the search results in SharePoint 2013. We have two more slides.
but they're easy ones. The first is just to call out to a couple things you've probably seen in a bunch of other sessions. We wanted to get some relevancy into here, but there's a really great session from the people who know it much better than we do, and I encourage you to go today to see that at 5 p.m. We'll also be available tonight to ask the experts. Please come. We'd be bored otherwise. And the last thing is on questions. I was going to make a joke about not wanting to keep you hanging, but I don't know if that joke really works.
Those are his daughters, by the way.
Those are my daughters. So if anybody has questions, we'll take them now, or you can come up and ask questions. Actually, why don't you come up, because I can't hear you from here. Thank you, everybody.